Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hey guys, welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast.
And girls, come on now.
Hey everybody, welcome to Knife Talk.
Hello,
hey
humans.
Gang. Hey everybody, welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, everybody. We're with you. My name is Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. Fellas, what's up?
What's up, Doc? It's all good. It's all good. We had a bit of a scare this week. We thought my wife was giving birth.
Oh, shit.
So we rushed to the hospital. But no, it's all good. I haven't been in the shop all week simply because I can't get into the shop. We've got a digger here on site, and they're digging up the garden, and they've literally built a trench right through the barn, which is the new workshop. So I just can't get into it. So I've been doing lots of Knife Talk stuff. So the Knife Talk website will be going live on Monday.
Nice.
As well as the Makery Network website.
Look at you.
And a special little game for people as well, which we'll announce on Monday.
So, you.
Yeah, it's been quite nice to just be sitting there on a laptop, really, doing stuff. It's been nice.
Nice. And Mareko, you are a roving reporter. You're over here
I'm
east.
On the road.
Where
I'm on
are
the East
you?
Coast.
What is going on?
I'm in Columbia, South Carolina, or just outside of Columbia, South Carolina. And I'm here at an event called Winter Strong, which is hosted by a company called Sornex. They make like heavyweight training equipment and like racks and stuff like that for barbells and squat racks and stuff like that. And really all kinds of equipment. Anyways, they not only are they athletes, but they're also outdoorsmen and hunters. And so, and they know a lot of people on both aspects of those different worlds. And mm-hmm. so they put on this event that helps bring them together. So hunters can be better athletes and athletes can become better hunters. And, in the last few years, so they've been doing it for 4 years. In the last 3 years, they've had knife makers coming out. And, so I'm here with Neil Kamimura and Lucas O'Hare and Josh Smith. Jason Knight was supposed to be here. Joe Maynard's here. Kyler Cummings. I'm trying to think who else. I think that. Oh God, I'm gonna feel terrible if I'm missing something.
So what are you doing that? You lifting elk? What's
No.
What are you doing?
I think we just named the show Lifting Elk.
Lifting elk. Yeah. You don't power squat elk?
Yeah.
Ew. I don't know what that means.
Okay. So wait, power squats.
Oh,
anyways.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're here demoing. So everybody's got, they have people doing archery and they got long range rifle, shooting guns. And they have like, I think not today, but tomorrow they're doing a, like kind of a Tough Mudder event where you're running around and then you do some archery and then you run around and do a bunch of weightlifting and then you run around and shoot some guns and you run around and you like chop down a tree, like all kinds of crazy stuff. I'm just here making knives, which is a nice kind of relaxing thing. In fact, I just got done forging about 40 minutes ago. And Neil Kamimura, Joe Maynard, and I were forging blades. We all made chef's knives, and we did completely hand-forged, like handle and blade profiles, and we heat-treated them. And now they're inside the house, the cabin here at the property. They have like 400 acres here. It's fucking crazy,
wow.
Monstrous.
So you're not going to do any archery. You're not going to do any.
Probably tomorrow. Yeah, probably tomorrow. Today is kind of like our day to demo. And so it's kind of, people kind of float around to the different events and things going on and they participate and And so,
cool.
Yeah.
How many are there? Is it like a big event?
Yeah, and it's all outdoors. Everybody's got tents and everything. And there's probably like 150 people here.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it's big but small. Yeah. And so yeah. It's nice.
So
yeah, super quaint.
Are you finding that there's a lot of people showing interest in what you guys are doing?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And Neil and Josh and Jason Knight was here last year. He was supposed to be here this year, but he couldn't make it this year. They've definitely drummed up a lot of interest. And, you know, seeing people forging, like, you don't see that very often. Or yeah. If you do, you've seen it on TV, but seeing it in person is very different. And people get to ask, like, hang out, stand right next to the forgers and the anvils while we're forging and ask us questions. And, yeah, it's good. Yeah. It's
and
good.
You guys, are they having a go as well? Are they making anything themselves?
I think this evening they're going to get a chance. But today, this kind of, we started probably like around 10 o'clock. We just got done, like I said, about 40 minutes ago. So we've been kind of demoing, and then people will come back later and get their hand at smashing on some steel and trying to forge cool. A little knife or something like that.
Pretty seriously good lineup, P.S. This isn't just a bunch of like goofballs at like a, you know, Colonial Williamsburg. I mean, this is like some of the best knife makers around. That's amazing. How's the food?
The food's good. Yeah. They have John and Jen Rivet, who are actually down from Canada. They are folks who they're like hunting guides, and they do also like a lot of cooking. And they take people on these hunting trips, guided hunting trips, and then they bring them back to like their place, and they cook up the food that they harvest right there in the thing. And they take people out like Joe Rogan. And oh wait, are we supposed to be mentioning his name?
Yeah, why not? You took people. You can talk about people. Who cares?
And all, just like all kinds of like big name people, and taking them out and go hunting and stuff like that. I think Bourdain actually went out with him and Joe. And anyways, so they're here doing all the cooking. The food is delicious, and it's a nice kind of relaxing way to still do some work. I'll definitely be able to do something with the knife and sell it that I'm working on, but also kind of relax. And I don't know, it's whenever I like forging and knife making, but it's completely different when you're not under the gun or the pressure of doing it as a custom worker or being in your normal shop and whatnot. It's very different. It's fun. So super relaxing. Oh my God. It's so nice.
Yeah. Relaxing. I would imagine.
Yeah, good. It's a 3 day.
So is that like a 2-3 day event?
We got here early. Thursday's kind of like the early day, and then today is the main event starts, and it goes till Sunday, kind of afternoon. Yeah,
nice. Yeah.
It'll be
wow.
good.
Or it sounds is awesome. So far.
Yeah, nice trip. Then I'm going down to straight Georgia. From there. Then you're off to
Georgia off on my mind. Then? Yeah, wow. That'll be fun. And more knife making.
Nice.
Sure.
We talk about that next week then, maybe.
Yeah.
Jeff, what's been going on in Jeff's world?
It's been good. It's been, you know, today is actually, we have an ice storm. So all the trees are covered in ice, which is which is not optimal. But other than that, I got approval on a set of the colorway for the set that I've been working on. And that's really great because it was like, you know, you just don't want to go be back and forth on a million different things. So my first attempt at the colorway was... I hit it on the head, so that's perfect. And then hopefully going to get that set out in the next 2 weeks, I'm hoping. And then had a really good meeting with Tony and Allison, who Tony's back for a little vacation, much needed. And then actually, interesting enough...
Where did he go? Was the food good?
I tell you what, here's why Tony Iazzi, none of you guys know him, he's one of the greatest of all time. They went to a place, and he's a culinary guy. So he said it was like an all-inclusive alcohol thing. So he decided, he prepared himself by saying, you order whatever drink you want. And he decided the kind of drink that he was going to have, thinking that they would have to add the most amount of alcohol because he felt like they were watering down the drinks.
But it's unlimited.
No, but so it's unlimited. But I mean, at the same time, it's just like he felt like some of the drinks were being watered down. So he ordered a drink, and I'm going to let you guys guess what the drink was that he felt was obscure enough that they wouldn't water it down.
Obscure.
What do you think? Obscure, but you guys know it.
Mai Tai.
No, Close.
Apero.
No. All right. I'm not going to be doing this. You guys think.
Negronis.
He was ordering Negronis. Yeah. Negronis everywhere.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because he felt like he said about the beginning of the meeting, he's like, I had to make sure these guys were watering it down. So I was going for some obscure drinks that they couldn't water down. So he was, that's side note. But interesting enough, I was, our friend Jimmy DiResta and Derek from Malden, their Netflix show is announced. That's going to be coming out in March, or the first week of March.
Cool.
It's called Making Fun or something like that. It looks great. It looks like it's like a kid's thing, making thing. And I was talking to Derek this morning, and then I was also talking this past week on the Full Blast podcast with Stephanie Hoffman, who is one of the judges on the TV show Metal Shop Masters. And it was very interesting because it made me think about people going on Fortune Fire and then how TV, how we as makers, there's this, it seems as though makers in general have this hope that someone is going to discover them or someone is going to offer them an opportunity or there's going to be, it's an artist mentality. It's almost like a pimp mentality where these people arrive and then we're going to give you money or we're going to give you this or experience and stuff like that.
Get on TV and become famous.
Well, unfortunately for makers and artists, they don't rely on themselves for everything. So they're hoping to be discovered. And this is a situation where Stephanie Hoffman was one of the judges, and she was, frankly, and she's not saying this, I'm saying this, she was very maligned on that show because they portrayed her like she was like almost like a heel or villain. And when you talk to her, her whole life, she was, because she was a woman getting involved in welding, she was rooted against. By, you know, the schools didn't want her in, or people didn't want her in, or job sites didn't want her in, and the people were rooting against her, and she fought and hard to become a very skilled welder. She's the face of the American Welding Society, but it was interesting because she talks about how she was able to kind of like, you know, not only worry about your own, you know, our own shortcomings as people and makers, but like you have outside obstacles against you. And the interesting thing was she worked all her way and she became such a big piece of the American Welding Society. They made her a judge on the show. She wasn't supposed to be the judge. She was the technical assistant, and they kind of painted her like a jerk, and it was really tough, and it was kind of an interesting, to the point where, you know, you get the feeling like she's over TV. She's over the experience because it was very difficult. And I thought it was a very kind of an interesting conversation because we talk about Forge and Fire all the time and the expectations and these TV shows and hoping something happens. And it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. They need to make characters of people, don't they? I think that's the thing.
Well, really, the only...
You know, you always get the bad guy, or in this case, the bad lady, and you always get the nice one. They paint people to certain lines.
It's in the editing. I mean, the way they edited it, she didn't watch it. I mean, she watched a couple episodes. And... it was real. I think it was, she's not going to say it, but she got a little bit emotional about it because, I mean, it was hard. I mean, she's worked this hard, and then all of a sudden she's get this, the same feeling she had when she was a student, where the welding school wouldn't let her take classes there because she was a woman and they didn't have a female bathroom. And her students were cruel to her. And it was very upsetting hearing her speak about it as in like, you know, I fucking made it all this way. And then I'm painted as this horrible human being. And it was really, it was very intense, to be honest with you. So
that went live. Well,
yeah. Well,
Friday.
Yeah, no, but
Friday that went live.
But it made me really think hard about how we as makers using social media to create content. In the back of your mind, I think people are looking to be discovered. And that's how it happens. You know, people are discovered, opportunities present themselves, and then, you know, you're unable to control the way you're made. I mean, these TV shows, we've said a million times, they're not in it for, you know, Fortune Fire is not in it for the ABS.
The what?
They're not in it for the craft of bladesmithing. They're into it. Yeah, yeah. They're in it for making a TV show. And it's the same thing with Metal Shop Masters. When they approached her about being a judge, they didn't know anything about welding. I mean, these people didn't give a shit about welding. You know, it's like, I mean, it could have been anything. They could have said anything. And it's troubling because you get the feeling that the only way that people can actually make something is you got to do it yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, creators, anybody who make things, they want it to be seen, don't they? They want, I don't necessarily think it's about being discovered, but they want the largest possible audience to see what they're showing off.
It's like that's seeking validation.
We want everybody to see what we can do.
Seeking validation.
You know, that's what being an artist is,
either saying, that's really great, or buying our work.
Yeah.
Or being on TV. And yeah, we all need a little bit of validation here and there. So maybe more than often.
Yeah. It's seeking validation for sure. It's seeking validation for sure, except for the fact that you get the feeling that somebody is going, there's, and it might not be conscious, it might be subconscious, that people feel like, I'm going to be discovered, and once I'm discovered, somebody is going to take care of all the technical parts of being in business, and I'm going to be given money to do things. And you get that feeling that a lot of people have that feeling, and then it's just not the case, really, almost ever. I mean, we know people who are on TV who have not good experiences. I mean, you know, Stephanie was, the great thing about this end of Stephanie's story is, you know, she's got her own shop on the Jersey Shore. She's got a fabrication shop. She's still very heavily involved with the American Welding Society, which is an awesome organization, by the way. I'm amazed at the website. And she's taking it upon herself, which is kind of the way I feel. It brings me to a story that my last real art show was going to be the most important art show I'd ever done. It was going to be a solo show at this, you know, really nice gallery. And I was going to do all new work, and I just started making knives. And I gave them, I had gallerists down here. We talked about their work. We talked about what we're going to do. It was going to be all new work. It was going to be a big production. And then when it was all said and done, they said, okay, it's going to be open for 6 weeks, Saturdays and Sundays, and you have to be there every day. And we're going to take 50, so every Saturday and Sunday, you're going to be there, and we're taking 50%. And I said to myself, why are you doing this to yourself? You're going to make all new work. You're going to promote it. You're going to fucking work the gallery for the opening hours, and then you're going to lose 50%. And I basically said, you know, I appreciate you giving me this opportunity, and I'm going to have to pass. And I pass it up. I was like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. And then I'll go back to Fader Knives. And I feel it's very important that people understand what their motivations are. And I hate hearing these stories of people saying, I got this TV show coming up, or they just got discovered me. And it's just heartbreak, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, talking about TV shows, that TV show of Jamie Oliver's that I was sort of shortlisted for,
right?
That was on TV this week.
Or the book.
And I was like, yes. So I'm thinking, it's about the book. Yeah. So you get to write a recipe book with him, basically. So I was thinking, do I watch this will I just be bitter if I'm watching it? But to be honest, I'm glad I didn't get on the show. It's a really good, entertaining show, actually. But it's a case of, you know, you've got 20 minutes to cook this kind of thing. Yeah. You know, and that's not what my idea was. And it's like, see why I wasn't actually put through. But it's good. But there was six people on the show. And I'm thinking, okay, they pick six people. Great. Then they're like, well, we've got weeks and weeks now, and each time there's a new bunch of six people. So I'm like, there's like 70 people, and I didn't get on. I'm like, oh, fuck's sake.
Oh, you know, it's just as well.
So it stung a little at the end when they said, next week we have another six people. I'm like, oh, you.
Yeah, but you know what, though? It's for the best, man. You have your own shit going on. You're not like...
I'm sure it is for the best.
Fuck that
I'm
guy.
Sure it is.
Fuck that guy with his weird hair and his dumb teeth.
Hey, he's still Craig's hero.
Cares about his ass.
Isn't he?
He's still my hero. And you know what? In the UK, they're considered good teeth then.
You know what? He's those are fucking good ass teeth for it. That's like a C teeth in New York is A teeth in England.
Holy shit.
Pretty much.
Like New York six.
So where are we? Shall we have a chat after this?
Sure.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
So you know what you need to do if you want an even heat. You need to go to knifetalk.net/heat, which will take you to Soul Ceramics. It'll automatically apply a discount for you of $75 and give you free shipping in the US. That's with Soul Ceramics. So you know what to do. Okay, shall we do some questions?
We have questions, we have dilemmas, and we have a pile of I asked the audience after last episode, we were talking about Blade Magazine saying the questions that you shouldn't ask knife makers. I reached out to our community and I got slammed. So whatever you want to do.
Let's do a couple of them first then. So things we shouldn't ask knife makers.
Okay, as a setup, this was from Blade Magazine. They had an article on things that you shouldn't ask a knife maker. So I reached out. If you go to follow us on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, we'll ask you to DM questions or dilemmas or stuff like that. So I asked the questions that you should never ask a knife maker, and I'll read them. I mean, we could do three shows of this. It's pretty. The fucking floodgates opened. So this one comes from Pig Iron Forge. He says, questions you should never ask a knife maker. How about this one? Why would you sell a chef knife that rusts? Oh, fuck. That's one. And then stop me. We'll talk about, tell me when you want to stop or if something reminds you of something.
Let's do another, and then we'll pop into a question.
Roar Blade says, things you shouldn't say to a knife maker. What's the price for a friend / family? And this one came in a lot. I love this one. If I give you this piece of steel and this piece of wood, what's the price?
The worst.
That's a good one.
Doubled.
And then one more. It's got so many of them. Marcelo Silva says, my favorite is it sharp? That's good. Oh, and let me just do this last one.
Oh, geez.
Dude, they're so good. Norris Knifework says, I like your fixed blades, can you make me a folder?
If I made folder.
Because no, I'm not interested in making a folder. That shit happens all the time. Can you make me a switchblade? I don't make switchblades.
Yeah. So we asked me to make a cookery and things like that. Yeah. So, okay, one more thing.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
Do it now. Okay, questions. The first one we have is from, again, from Instagram. So he sent through to us at Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. He's DM'd us with this question. It's Benko Wald. Still living the show after all these years. So I've got a legitimate question for you guys, kind of inspired by a question from last week's episode. What have been the best workshop upgrades or tweaks you've made to your shop? I'm not talking about shiny machines or fancy equipment, but the actual space itself. I really appreciate your commitment to the show, admire the consistency, podcasting, he goes on and on and on. But yeah, he's asking about the actual space that we work in, upgrades and tweaks that has saved you time, money, and all the rest
of it. Just to let you know, his name is Ben Kowald, not Benko Wald.
Oh, sorry.
Which is better, though. That's like KLB, man. Benko Wald is definitely a fucking better
Benko
one.
Benko Wald.
I love it when we screw the names up. Benko Wald, is that it would do Benko Wald?
Yeah. Ben Cold. Okay. So yeah, the actual space itself, any hacks, tweaks, anything like that at all?
Think of anything.
What do you think, Bracco?
Things pretty simple in my shop. I think really making sure that I do a good job organizing the grinding room, because workflow in there can be pretty fucking lame.
I mean, you just said it. If you've got the space, divide a grinding room to the rest of the space.
Yeah,
that was a massive help.
Even if
help.
It's just a booth,
so you don't get,
honestly,
you don't get dust and
it
shit
could be
everywhere.
The size of just like a telephone booth, but somewhere, some way to isolate the dust will make such a difference. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that I've just done it now, a new place here, whereas before I had like wooden flooring and there's gaps in between them and all the rest of it. So sweeping up was always a nightmare. So I've got like aluminium sort of checker plate flooring in the new shop. So brushing up is just seamless throughout. So you can just brush everything up into a pile and sweep up. So just, so much quicker sweeping up. So even if it's just putting down lino or anything, you've got one constant level and one constant sort of surface, as opposed to dust getting in everywhere. That's a massive help too.
You got anything, Jeff?
I would say, for me, I made two kind of standing tables in the middle of the rooms. And one of them is, and I keep them tall enough that you can't sit at them. Like, they're not like short tables. So they're like, they come up to your waist. I like tables to be on the high sides. I don't want to do any sitting. Those two tables, the one table kind of is, it's like an island in the shop. So all the different grinders, I can use the table on for one side. I can use the table on for the other side. It's so great. And then I have another table, which is like same thing. It's a floating table in the middle of the room. They're all on casters, in case, well, I'm going to have to, if I ever have to move, Cliff Dufton's, my 9,000 pound roommate, I have his lathe that's, you know, covered in belts.
It's still there.
I'll have him. I got him locked in. I don't know what's going to come first. He's either going to take the lathe away or all the, it's in a chrysalis stage with, all the used belts are covering it like a tarp. I'm hoping it transforms into a little giant or something.
I want to see
I call it my, 9,000 pound roommate. It's just like, so, but the floating tall tables, like, you know, like up to past your waist,
like counter height, right? Like 36 inches.
I think this is closer to 40. I made it really high, and I love it because I don't want to bend over. I want everything to be on the high side. So those were huge. And then the other thing is having a room for all the colors. I'm making like kind of a dedicated color lab for colors, so I can kind of put things together. It was huge. Just to kind of be able to, with good light, that I can kind of see things and futz around with that.
Yeah. Good lighting. That's another one. I mean,
I got mediocre
cheap
lighting.
Get good lighting in.
That's what I was just going to, I just remembered one thing that's really helped is that I bought these rechargeable pen lights off Amazon. You can get a set of them for like $16 or something like that. And they're rechargeable with like USB cables and whatnot. But I clip them onto the filters of my respirator, and instead of having to move a light around the grinder and all that stuff, it's on like the mask pointing straight at the work from both sides, and the batteries last for a good amount of time, and it's just the light's always right there where you need it, and that has been massive for me.
Bolting, if you have a hand sanding table, bolt that fucking table to the wall. Table to the wall, because you don't want the whole goddamn table wiggling. That's bullshit. Don't do that. So I welded plates to the sides of the table, and I bolted that shit to the wall, so there is no moving at all.
Yeah.
Good move.
That's about it for me, I think, regards to space.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, pretty good. Here's a trick. Here's a fucking tip. If you have a bathroom in a welding shop, Stephanie Hoffman told me she got black toilets. That's goddamn genius.
So there's not little
because if you got that rusty dust coming off that penis, you know, it goes onto the.
That's not what she said, surely.
That's not what she said. But if it goes down on the porcelain, it kind of roots in there, and you can't get it off. And you got to replace it. Black toilets, ladies and germs. The next toilet you buy will be a black toilet.
Where would you source a black toilet?
Apparently, Home. That's what I said to her. She said Home Depot. They have them, black toilets at Home Depot. Wow. So,
there you go.
Black toilets, everyone.
lift an elk in black toilets. The next one comes from Leonardo Lee, our good friend Leonardo Lee, who has a baby on the way. Congratulations to Leonardo. Good luck to you and your new family. This is very exciting. He says, I have a question. My hammer handles have been feeling very smooth and slippery lately, which makes them harder to control. Do you have any recommendations? Also, has anyone ever tried checkering their hammers, the little diamond stripes carved into the wood? What do you do about that?
So is hammer handles very smooth and slippery?
Forging hammer handles.
Come on, Craig. I thought you were the blacksmith expert.
Yeah, I mean, I don't use a hammer in anger too often, but I'd imagine that if they're not that smooth, you're going to get sort of calluses, and you're going to get, you know, you'd want them to be smooth, I would have thought. But I don't know. But with regards to sort of checkering on the wood, I've seen people, and not necessarily for hammers, but for other things, using the you know, that sort of pyro, you know, those little knives, those hot knives, and using that to do a sort of checkering as opposed to like a checkering file. And, you know, mountains and all that kind of stuff they're putting on them. So I suppose that would give some grip. But yeah.
I don't think you want checkering on a forging hammer.
Yeah, I don't think you want that either. That'd be
terrible. Would be like, yeah, you'd all of a sudden your hand would be like, wouldn't you be very unhappy? What do you do, Mareko? What do you do to your hammers?
Well, I use my man hands and I hold it like a man with strength.
Damn, Winterstrong. Winterstrong is really injecting that testosterone into you. That fucking elk is just like
so the elk is eating.
Jesus Christ, Mareko. That was like elk talk right there. They're bench pressing elk into your veins already.
Here's your man hands, bitch. Be a little bitch and fucking hold on to the hammer.
Leonardo.
It's a fucking problem.
Get your arrows out. We're benching elk.
No. No, you know what? I just recently, you hit the handle with a little paste wax and polish it up. It has a nice stick, like tacky stickiness to it. And so I've found that helps keep the handle from sliding around. Because I do, especially after, as if you've been forging for maybe a couple hours or something like that, I definitely experience, like, arm fatigue and start holding the hammer like a little bitch. And
quiet, they'll hear you, Mareko.
Yeah, they'll throw you out. They'll bench press you out off the property.
They'll stick a target on your back and get you running through the field.
Move it!
Get running!
Biggest pussy gets thrown out of here! Get out of here!
I think the paste wax is a good move.
Okay. I have this argument with a lot of blacksmiths, and I've started making my handles on the thinner side because I kind of I use the prescription that my old teacher Uri Hoffe did. As the older he was getting, the smaller the handles were getting, and I made my handles on the thinner side. And what I noticed is, and the reason why is because when you're forging for a long time, you're not doing the death grip. You're actually guiding it. So it does, at the end, it's flying out of your hand a little bit. So I make them on the thinner side so I'm not gripping it like a crazy person. The other thing I do is I hand sand them down to, I sand them down to like 400 grit. Then I hit them with a little bit of fire because it's just like getting a little that darkness. And then I hit it with some axe wax, and then I hit the axe wax with the heat gun. And then the axe wax goes into the wood, and then I don't want to wipe it off. It's not tacky, and it's not slick, but it's not slippery. You definitely want something on the handle. And I fight with John all the time in regards to, he sends me hammers, and he gets mad because I carve them down all the time. I think sometimes some of these big handles, where you're gripping too hard, I think it puts too much pressure in your hand, which ultimately leads to fatigue. So I find myself choked up a lot more, and my handles are on the thinner side. Not like toothpicks, but like I've never broken a handle once. Never once. And I can go all day.
Nice.
But the key is like...
Hear that, ladies? You can go all day.
When you sand it, you can sand it up to 800. I sand it up to 800 sometimes. You definitely want to put something on it. But don't checker it because you're going to end up with like, you know, blisters. For sure. And, you know, I hear axe wax is great for him. All my handles have axe wax on them. And then I heat gun them in and wipe them down.
Cool. Nice. Are we going to take guess at Leonardo's baby? Who's got the baby name?
Speaking of guessing baby names, you said in the last episode that your baby's name is a five-letter name with a U in it. And there was one guess. Oh, there was a few.
And
guesses.
You've been wordling this week as well. We're trying to wordle my baby's name.
Well, we've been trying, and there was one person thought maybe the name was Luigi. Luigi Lockwood.
I like it. Change approved. There we go.
Luigi Lockwood. Hey! Daddy, come on, hey!
Well, wait. What did you say? You said fucking Bruno.
Hillary, my wife. Bruno. My wife is into Wordle too, so I said, we got to find it out. She goes, oh, Bruno. And I'm like, here's Bruno. And then you send me a gif of Bruno. You know?
I have some guesses.
Yeah, we heard some of your guesses.
Obviously, I didn't.
Come on, then. Let's go for it.
Did you
read some of your guesses last week?
Wait.
Oof.
Oh, you did.
I mean,
you didn't
they're
like
fine,
them?
But you even admitted they weren't that great. So, I mean, we kind of like agreed with you.
You didn't like Horus? I mean, Horus isn't a good name.
We figured you thought he was
Horus.
Like Egyptian.
There's no Horus in this house.
Horus is a good name. It's an ancient name. All right, never mind. We won't.
Come on now. Give a couple.
Come on.
Okay. We got Horus. Wait. Well, you read him last week. All right. So Horus, Boris, Billy.
Boris. There's definitely no Boris in this house. Gee.
Joshy.
No.
Yeah.
Ripley.
Yeah, you don't even listen to the podcast. We read them all. We read them on the end of the podcast.
Okay.
Joshy. I like Joshy. Joshy Lockwood.
Joshy. He's not going to do muscle camps, is he, little Joshy?
Yeah. He'll get his dick kicked in.
The muscle camps. The muscle camps.
Where were
we? Questions. We still have more things you shouldn't say to a knife maker, and we have dilemmas. Your call.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's tell all our Canadian listeners, who we love, by the way, no matter what we've been saying the last few weeks. if you're looking for knife supplies, you need to go to maritimeknifesupply.com. They're the one-stop shop for knife makers who are in Canada. They do Rhino Wet. They're a distributor of combat abrasives as well. So all the good stuff that we talk about on the show, if you're in Canada, that's the place to get it from, maritimeknifesupply.com. And they have a deal with abrasives, so if you buy 10 belts, you get 10% off too. Nice. Okay, let's have some dilemmas, maybe.
Okay, dilemmas. Okay, let me find. Okay, tough scenarios. We have one tough scenario. Actually, this is going to be funny. So McMurdy, so if you have a tough scenario or dilemma for us, send them into Knife Talk. I didn't realize we have one, so that's fine. Okay. Today's Wardle is today's Wardle in four. Now on to he's bragging. McMurdy and I's bragged that he got the Wordle in four guesses. Now on to handstanding. Here's a dilemma for the show. You're offered money from a tabloid to divulge the name of your unborn child ahead of its birth. Do you A, take the offer, B, tell them to pound sand, C, reach out to other tabloids and start a bidding war, and why is Craig's answer C?
Well, to be honest, I'm okay sharing the name completely, but my wife is just like, we've got to have some sort of surprise for family members.
She doesn't listen. Your family doesn't listen either.
You're quite right.
Just don't say it. Just everybody keep your mouth shut.
She would kill me.
She would.
Listen, all these fuckers who are listening to the show, they're like requesting my wife as a friend on Facebook and shit. And she's like, who are these people? I don't know. So and so
happens to my wife too.
Ace Blacksmiths. I don't know who they are, but yeah, very strange. But she'd kill me. She would kill me. But I mean, when you say tabloids, are we talking, you know, shitty red tops? Are we talking the good ones with money to spend?
What's a shitty red top? You know?
The shitty red tops.
Is that with Samantha Fox in the middle? With her?
They did they did. Basically, there's a couple of papers in the UK, and they've all got like a red banner as their logo, and they're all shitty. They're like the low end of tabloids, and they're generally people refer to them as the red tops.
I like that.
If it was one of them, no. But I mean, if we're talking, you know, something with a bit of class behind it, and they got a bit of money.
Oh yeah, class. That's fuck, nothing yeah. says nothing says.
Daddy needs to buy a pushchair, you know. So yes,
is that what you call a stroller?
Yes,
a pushchair.
Pushchair. Okay. Yes.
Well, now that we don't have any more dilemmas, right. And Craig obviously is like, you know, show me the money. I'll do a little bit of listener feedback. This one comes from Snaremore. The episode with Dr. Thomas was awesome. Especially as a big nerd and hobbyist, he's a computer scientist by trade. I have little practical use for a lot of the more advanced stuff, but I find it fascinating. He's eloquent and thorough in his discussion. Really enjoyed it. And then we also last week, we got a couple messages from in regards to our conversation about I-beams. Mreko, you weren't there. People were talking about, the question was, is it true that if you put a fuller into a blade, it makes it stronger? And the funny thing is our good buddy, we have our good friend, Ben Coleman, who was on the cover of Blade magazine, sent me a message, and he sent me this whole message on
Ben Coleman Knives.
He writes me this message, and he writes me this whole thing about what it is and everything like that. And I said, "Are you sure?" And he goes, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Because I'm going to read this." And he's like, "Wait a second." And he goes back, and then he did something else. But we got reached out to by Uhor Hudiman, who says, "Hello to the best podcast out there. I'm here to give a note on this I-beam myth. The I-beam is strong because of the web. The I-beam is placed in structures where force is applied to a web. If you apply the force to a web, now the web's the thin part on the inside, right? On the other way, the I-beam is very weak. The basic explanation for I-beam shape is that it's designed to resist the force in one way so that you can reduce the weight where you don't need to resist the force. In a knife, it does make a knife weaker by reducing the web thickness, and it's less resistant to bending. Maybe it's better for swords, so they're actually bend easier, but otherwise it's just for looks. Look up the secret behind the I-beam shape. So that was...
There we go. Factual information on the show this week.
That's great.
Yeah, because it was an interesting question because somebody had said, Reco, and it'd be interesting to hear your take on it. Somebody said to one of the knife makers that when you put in a fuller, or some people call it a blood groove, whatever, that it makes the knife stronger, and they wanted our opinion. What do you think?
I mean, I could see where they're going with that, but I think, like he was saying, the greater function is to lighten up the tool, because if it's got extra weight in it, there's really no it's not necessary to have, like, especially if it's a large knife for cutting down brush and swinging around chopping through saplings and stuff like that. You don't need all that extra weight, because what's really important, like, it's easy to create a lot of velocity, and so what's important is how the geometry of the blade, but all the extra weight.
But if you're winter strong, fuck I-beams. I want all that weight. Give me your heaviest knife you got, bitch. Are they saying bitch a lot at Winter Strong? In my mind, they're saying it all the time.
Definitely not.
Just walking around saying bitch.
Oh, my God.
What's wrong with you?
I think it's funny.
Well, I'm going to tell everybody about Dharma Steel quickly. Not only do they put on a great event every year, they make great Damascus, stainless Damascus. Go take a look at dharmasteel.se. If you set up an account and then you use Knife Talk when you check out, you'll get 10% off your order. And they've got some amazing patterns. So if you're unsure, also take a look at Dharma Steel Lab on Instagram, and they put up pictures of some of the knives that, you know, people have made using Dharma Steel. And they're always be the high-end stuff. So go take a look at dharmasteel.se, Dharma Steel Lab on Instagram. Okay, let's do another question. This one's anonymous. I've got a question, but I prefer it to be anonymous, they say. I was given a piece of ivory, but I have no idea of the origin of the pieces. The person that gave them to me says he's had them for years, but has no paperwork on them. I thought it would be cool to use the pieces on knife handles, but thought it may be opening up a can of worms that I want nothing to do with. What are your thoughts? Ivory.
It's hard if you don't have that paperwork to kind of, justify using it or verify that it's not new stuff. Usually antique ivory, whether it's, there's a back gate here, sorry, is antique ivory, like from walrus ivory or some sort of, or even mammoth ivory. Some people are even sketched out to use mammoth ivory, especially if it's really clean and not a lot of staining, because it can be mistaken for elephant ivory. But you can usually tell the difference because there will be some sort of staining in either style of antique ivory. But if it's pretty clean looking, it's probably fresher, illegal ivory. And if that is the case, you probably don't want to use it.
Have you ever used it yourself?
Never.
I wonder if it would smell, you know, like using horn, that kind of thing.
Oh, it stinks. It still smells. Yeah.
Yeah, I stay away out of my... I used some... some sort of buffalo horn, and I was like, I don't need this in my life. And it was go ahead. You want to use some horns and stuff, fine. It's just not for me. You know, it's just, I want to get rid of wood, for Christ's sake. So I don't want to, but I would think that I would have a problem. I would probably have a problem. It's funny because it's a double-edged sword. Part of you is just like, I want it so someone else doesn't have it. But then at the same time, it's like, I just don't need that, putting that out in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If he's already got it, he's got it. You know, why waste it because it's there? But it's an awkward. I mean, I sort of toyed with the idea of using Elferin in the past, which is like a synthetic ivory.
Yeah,
and I used it a little bit, and I didn't particularly like it as a material anyway because it just stained so easily. But even then, really? it's almost like pretending to be something that it's not, which, you know, doesn't have a good sort of reputation and that kind of thing. And it's just a bit icky, and just stay away from those waters.
I kind of like that idea of you're making something that's clearly not ivory, but you're kind of still capturing the look of it. I don't have a problem with it.
But it's almost my feeling like people who wear fake fur, you're almost glamorizing using
fur. What about eating veggie burgers?
Even though it's not, you know?
Eating veggie burgers?
I don't eat chicken
like
that.
All right. See, there you go.
Come on.
Right, clear as the bell. Okay.
But you know what I mean? It's almost like glamorizing the use of something when it's not it anyway. And it's, I don't know. It's a bit, I find it a bit weird.
I can imagine, though, you'd have that feeling of like, wow, this is pretty rare and it's problematic. But if I don't do anything with it, I still kind of want it. I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I would stay away from that shit, all of it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Make a nice knife for yourself, maybe, with it. That way it's not going to waste. And, it's got a use.
Okay. Next question comes from Ross Speak Steelworks. Steelwork. Ross Speak Steelwork. Hey, guys. I'm curious as to what gloves you guys use in your shops. I do a lot of forging, and I'm wondering if there are any good leather gloves that balance durability and dexterity. Thanks.
I mean, I personally, without doing forging, the only gloves that I use in the shop are sort of latex gloves for gluing up, that kind of thing. Do you use gloves when forging, Mareka?
I don't, actually. It's really hard to hold on to hammers. Especially when you're forging a blade and you're swinging it, you know, probably hundreds of times to forge your blade out. It is a pain in the ass to wear gloves and do that. A lot of people do it. Good for them. I just cannot handle it because it basically puts extra stress in your hand to fatigue your hands. And maybe I'm just being a bitch about it.
No, you're 100% right. I hate wearing gloves. The only time I'll wear a glove is on my managing hand. If it's something really hot. But, I mean, if I'm cooling down my tongs every 5 minutes, I'm never that close in any way, so it doesn't really matter. I don't like wearing gloves when I'm forging at all. But if I were to use gloves, my favorite gloves to use, believe it or not, I really like TIG welding gloves. Because they're... Not the ones that are furry. When I say furry, the ones that are not... The ones that are like... I don't know if it's deer skin or something like that. Something about TIG welding gloves, you have such better, they're much more, you have much more dexterity because they're meant for, you know, you're holding that filler rod and you're adding to the pool of the weld when you're TIG welding. So TIG welding gloves are if I were to use gloves, with the exception of like heavy duty welding gloves, I would get TIG welding gloves. But for forging, I don't wear gloves at all.
There we go.
Yeah, if I'm heat treating, I guess the only time I would wear gloves is if I'm heat treating either out of my even heat kiln or out of the forge, because you usually got a lot of heat and you're spending a lot of time with your hands, like, or at least especially out of the forge, with your hands in front of the forge. But even like the heat coming out of the oven, fucking intense. So that's probably the only time. Well, an angle grinder.
Oh, yeah. Life. Angle grinder for sure.
Other than that, always with the angle grinder. But other than that, I never wear gloves when I'm forging.
Well, I don't with an ankle grinder, you see.
It's because
anything that spins, anything with a sort of rotary spin on it, I make sure I've got nothing close to anything, you know, whether it's gloves or, you know, anything hanging
over.
That's
because you have the blade guard on. Yeah.
Sensible. Oh, that's for a sensible man.
That's for like elk. You know. What are you doing with that blade guard? let me read some of these questions, because I mean, some of the questions you should ever ask knife makers. It's like a giant list.
Yeah, let's do some more of those.
Jean Philippe says, "How much money do you spend on belts each year?" That's a question you should never ask a knife maker.
That's a way to upset a knife maker.
This one comes from John Pocket Dump. Why does it cost so much money?
Sorry, go back. What was your name?
Pocket Dump.
He's shitting in his pocket.
Pocket Dump. Jeez. John's Pocket Dump. Okay. He's a good listener. Okay. Don't make fun of his name. John's Pocket Dump. John's Pocket Dump says, "Why does it cost so much money?" This is my favorite. My favorite knife. My favorite one of our listeners' names. It's just Salty. His name is Salty. Salty says, "Can I help you make the knife?" That's a good one.
Oh.
419 Forging says, "What kind of knife can I get for under $100?" That's a question you should never ask a knife maker. Mike Nye says, "Is this knife dishwasher safe?" That's another one.
Yeah.
Griff says, "Never ask a knife maker if they've used or do use a, quote, super steel, one that can pierce a tank or cut another blade in half, because you've watched way too much anime." Ricardo Carrasco says, "Why do you charge so much when I can buy the same knife on Amazon?"
Save big this summer with great deals, all in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA choice value packs of T-bone steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon, limit 5. Then buy one, get one free on select varieties of Entenmann's, Wonder Bread, or Vita Coco Water, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Matt Vogt says, "Never ask how much would a knife cost if I sent you all the material." BJ Custom says, "What are you making knives for? Do you want to kill someone?" Derek Riley says, "Why does it cost so much?" That's my favorite question you shouldn't ask a knife maker. Tagaron says, "Can I get a discount since we've known each other for such a long time? If I get the materials, leaf springs, for example, will you like make me a knife in exchange?" And Right Edgeworks EDC asks, "Hey, have you been on that TV show?" That's a question you shouldn't ask a knife maker. And then
a lot of them are sort of about cost, really, aren't
they? Well, I mean, the questions that you shouldn't ask a knife maker, I would imagine, are just like normal questions, but you don't realize that they're insulting. You know, I think it's like, you know, people don't realize. You know, I think that especially when they ask you these tough questions, like, why is it so much money, or why is it this, they expect you to like be a lawyer for yourself, and you should be able to explain yourself without, you know, don't take it personally. This is just business, when it's all personal. That's why you're not supposed to say these things to people.
Yeah.
Tell me if you want me to keep going, or we can go on to something else.
Well, I think you need to explain yourself a second first. Why the hell would you use a Broadbeck Ironworks grinder?
I used it today. It's a wonderful grinder. It's versatile as hell. It goes horizontal and vertical. It's well priced. It has a ton of attachments, and the attachments are all awesome. And it's a great knife maker. It's the one grinder you're going to need. And you should definitely go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in promo code KNIFETALK, and then you can upgrade to the Moreco Platin, which is a dynamite design. Deep throat, great for handles, it's got a big... what are you laughing about? What's the matter? What's the matter?
No, go on. As you
okay. It's great. It's an awesome, it's a great attachment for all your needs, all your knife making needs. You go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in promo code Knife Talk, get that Moreco Deep Platin.
There we go. Whilst we're talking about Deep Throat, have you seen the Pam and Tommy show that's on Disney?
It's on a Disney.
It's on Disney Plus. The Pam and Tommy.
No, it's on Hulu.
It's a new show. Well, over here, it's on Disney Plus in the UK.
Disney Plus in Europe.
Yeah. Disney's a little bit more.
They love that. They love that dick over in Disney in Europe.
I haven't seen that, but I know somebody watched the first episode. They said it's worse than you could possibly imagine. They say it's terrible.
Oh, really? Worse isn't because it's so torrid, or
Well, apparently the acting's to everything about it is just terrible. You know, it's not a good
watch. I can't believe they have it on Disney Plus. That's shocking.
Yeah, it's Disney Plus. I would have thought it would have been worldwide on Disney Plus. But anyway, it certainly is in Europe. Yeah. And then advertising on like normal TV, and you're like the Pam and Tom story. What's this? And it's like coming to Disney Plus. Like,
they're trying to take on the Olympics, obviously.
Yes, yeah. Which is today? The ceremony's today. It's happening now, isn't it? The opening ceremony. I like the Winter Olympics. I think I prefer that to the Summer Olympics.
What's
the
sport
Olympics.
You like the most?
I like on the snowboards and they do like the freestyling, you know, and they got to do all these crazy tricks and they do the one where it's
like
sound like an expert, really? Don't I? It's the one where they're on these boards and they're on ice and they go really fast. But what's it called?
The half pipe?
No, there's one where they're on snowboards and they do it on skis as well, but it's a race and there's like six of them in a line and they race together at the same time. And they're all falling over each other, and it's fucking brilliant. I can't think what it's called. It's not Speed Slope or something. Like that.
It's not called Speed Slope. What kind of fucking name is that?
I'm just making shit. Honestly,
take the rolling chair down there?
I'm going to Google it.
That's the best name you got? Speed Slope?
Right, bear with me. I'm going to carry on with the next question. I'm going to need to find this.
Let me read a couple more while we're here. Questions that you should not ask a knife maker. And what I'm going to do next week is I want you, the listener, to send in questions that knife makers shouldn't say to their customers.
It's called Slope Style, by the way. It's called Slope Style.
That's a terrible name, too. Speed Slope is so much
better.
Speed
Slope's better.
Speed Slope is a million times better than Slope Style. These are terrible names.
But it's great because they always fall over. I said there's either six or eight of them racing together, and yeah, they're crashing into it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Okay. Tree Hill Custom Knives says, here's a question that you should never ask a knife maker. Do you think you could make a knife like insert your name here because they're just too expensive?
Oh, my God.
And this one comes from JVB Knives Canada, who just had a baby boy. Congratulations to your new family.
Baby Luigi. Well done.
Yeah, congratulations. Here's a good one. This one you should never ask a knife maker. Are you able to make it any faster? And then the follow-up question is, can I watch you make it? Yeah, it's no good. Oh. I once had a customer come up and call me midway through. He's like, I want to come and help finish the knife. And I was just like, he's like, I think it'd be really important to me to be able to come up and finish the knife.
They can come handstand the knife.
I was just like, it's not going to be that important to you or me. And all I imagine is the guy comes up, he's got like a bandana around his head, like Steve Carell from The Office.
He's all kitted out.
Prison Mike. I don't know if you remember that. And he's like looking like a blue. You know what I'm talking about? Like this fucking goofball.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, like New York City, like working guys.
Ready
like
to work.
Fucking, he's got his fucking bandana wrapped around his head and he's just like ready to fucking.
Kelton. Oh, so on fireworks.
I'm ready to fucking pump some elk. I'm ready to fucking pump some elk. I was just like, yo, bro, it isn't like that, man, at all. I'll let you sweep, and that's just about it.
Yeah.
And then Zach Reimer says, have you ever seen Forge and Fire? Definitely don't say that to a knife maker. Fiery Ice and Forge says, do you have insurance to keep the law from coming after you if your knife is used to someone? I'm probably not selling to this person if their IG has nothing but gore and sacrifice stuff on it. If they ask me. Fiery Ice and Forge. CJ Miller says, here's a question you should never ask a knife maker. Hey, I really like your work, but it's a bit out of my price range. Would you make me one for half the amount?
Oh. Yeah. Half is good, too.
I'll read a couple more. We got a couple more. We have a lot more, but I'll just read a couple more when we go back to questions. Zach Bonner says, can you do it cheaper? Is the most common thing that I get. My response is always, no, dipshit, I can't, LOL. And then our main man KLB says, can you make me a sword for $100? If you can't, then you're not as good as those Fortune Fire guys. And then I got a million. I mean, I legitimately got a pile of them, so we can whatever you want to do.
Yeah, we'll pepper them in overcoming shows,
okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. Mareko, do you want to take this one from Joe Egbert?
Yes. He says, I have a post vise that I need to clean up and weld some spots on the jaws to level out. Any tips on the best way to do it? Would there be any reason to use hard-facing rod like some people do on anvils? So I think this is a better question for Jeff, but my guess is you don't need the hard-facing
rod. I actually reached, when I read this, I reached out to Chris Cash of the Axe and Iron podcast, okay, because he is Mr. Restoration. And I asked him the question, and I said to him basically, so what I asked him was, are post vices, are the jaws usually hardened? And he said, majority of post vices do not have hardened jaws. The majority of them. Some of them do. But I mean, a lot of times you see him and other blacksmiths are straightening the jaws of post. I'm talking about post vices. I'm not talking, or leg vices. I'm not talking about like the thing you got from the Harbor Freight or Home Depot. So what he said was, is you can for sure with like most post vices, obviously you want to try to figure out what it is, but you can restore it with, you know, regular MIG wire. Because I mean, you're not really, I mean, you know, they're not really meant to be, they're meant to be able to be damaged. You know, you want to you don't want to be able to fix them. You don't want them to be rock hard.
Sure. Did he suggest preheating the jaws some before doing some forging so you get some decent weld?
I don't know. No, he just basically said, you know, if they're, you know, some of them are going to be wrought iron, some of them are going to be mild steel. Just go for it. Yeah. And he said, just, you know, he said, you want to try to figure out what it is. But I mean, they're most of the post vice jaws, a majority of them, not all of them, but a majority of them aren't heat treated. Yeah. So there's no real reason to worry about hard face rods.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, cool. Oh, you could just buy yourself a new post vice from TexasFarrierSupply.com.
You think they have post vices?
Using Knife Talk.
They said pulse voices.
Well, Farrier Supplies, you'd have thought maybe. I don't
are
know.
You lying
but
to our,
but
are
maybe.
You lying to our
maybe there's a really tenuous link to one of our suppliers there, our sponsors. But TexasFarrierSupply.com, they got everything you need, whether you're a knife maker or a farrier or whatever you may be, a blacksmith, whatever you may be, including Indasa RhinoWet, which is the best sandpaper. We all use it. It saves you time and therefore it saves you money. But, you know, if you go to TexasFarrierSupply.com, if you put in Knife Talk 10, you'll get 10% off your order as well. So make sure you do that. Right. Okay.
Dude, so you were talking about Chris Cash. Those forging set up, what is it, the workstations he's been putting out? Those things are fucking
Chris
sick.
Chris, those guys do a great job. He makes these setups.
Dude,
with
so
like,
cool.
It's got a vice, and he really does a nice job. And he was actually on the recent episode of the Axe and Iron podcast. He says that there's a lot of people who are totally ripping him off. And it's like, but I mean, at the same time, he's like, they're doing a lousy job too. So yeah, his sets are really cool. Everything
you get what you pay for.
Everything he does is really nice. I'm a giant. I talked to him today. I had a great conversation. He's a dynamite guy, a hustler of the highest order, hardworking. Can't find a nicer guy than Chris Cash.
Nice. But another Chris has a message. Chris Novak. Hey guys, what speed do you guys run finer belts like 220 and above on your grinder? He said, I still have difficulty with belt chatter, even with a soft backing and low speed.
Really?
Jeff, 220 and above, what sort of speeds
are you? I mean, 220 and above, if I'm using a platen, I'm going less than 50%, you know, especially if it's brand new, because I don't want that chatter. And I wonder, that chatter is the seam, obviously, the seam of the joint. The 220 belts are that very thin, J-Flex belt. I think we may have mentioned it years ago, is a friend of ours was like kind of sanding down a little bit of the belt seam.
What? Tape.
I would say the name, but I don't want them to have to call me back and say, that wasn't me. But I think that some people are, you know, you could do that, or you put a little, if you put like some sort of backing behind it, so like even just like a couple pieces of like blue tape on your hard platen, you might get less of that chatter.
Hmm.
I've done that.
I would have thought sanding down that tape, because the tape isn't sort of impregnated into the belt. It's
That's why I didn't say the name.
On the outside of the belt, so you likely get slapped.
That's
in the
why I didn't say the name of Adam from Built Sharp.
I would say that.
What?
I feel like that would be a really...
Adam from Built Sharp says you should just cut them off. Cut the belts off. Just kidding. I think it was him.
But yeah, belt. That's an interesting one, actually, about running what sort of speeds, because, I mean, majority of us probably don't really know what speeds we're running. It's all sort of by feel. Because, you know, if we've got VFDs, they're given like a hertz level as opposed to like an RPM.
Sure.
Or if you don't have VFD, you won't have a clue anyway. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if we're all running very, very different speeds just because we do what we're used to. You know, sure. There's no sort of dial into number 9 in your way.
But obviously, it depends if you're getting a different reaction if you're using a platen or not. If you're not using a platen, there's no chatter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ways you can create a softback, you can take, say you got a bunch of Scotch-Brite belts from combat, and they get to a point where they're kind of worn out and you can't really use them conventionally anymore. I have friends who have taken and cut those belts into like short strips that fit right on top of the platen, and either glue it to, or like have a sacrificial platen, or not, like a temporary platen that slaps on the front, or make a platen where, anyways, you got the Scotch-Brite glued to it, and then that acts as a bit of a cushion to help smooth out that potential chatter.
More cushion for the pushing.
Exactly.
Okay. Aggressive.
What was
metal.
Your answer?
This is a long one.
What do you do?
Me?
Well, all of you.
Oh.
Me. I get, you know, the feel for it. It's hard to sort of to tell you what sort of speed, because, let's say, with the VFD, it's going to be in hertz, and they're not always going to be the same for everybody.
But less than half?
Yeah, maybe half. I don't know. I don't know is the answer until I put a belt on and I feel it. I don't know. I don't have a standard sort of. I'm always changing speed, so I don't just turn it on and it's at that speed. I've got a knob right next to. Hey, she said. A knob right next to me, which I like to play with.
You're really pathetic. It's pathetic.
You're a fucking.
It's pathetic.
So, I usually.
Go ahead, Mareko.
I have mine running at on my broadback with the VFD. I have it running about 40, because I think also usually those higher grit belts are alumina oxide, and as I understand, alumina oxide wants to be ran a little bit on the slower side. But it also depends on what I'm actually doing. So if I'm using it to sharpen a knife, I'm running at like 15. But if I'm handle sculpting, I'm usually around 30. And if I'm doing some blade stuff, I'm around 40, 20 to 40, depending on how close to the edge.
And how? And
if I'm,
sorry,
if I'm,
keep going.
Oh, go ahead. I was just gonna say, if I'm like doing an S grind and I'm riding the hollow, like I'll bump it up to 40. But if I'm then working the convex along closer to the cutting edge, then I'll pull it down to 20. And it's a little slower and takes a little longer, but I am less likely to overheat that cutting edge as I'm refining it. And
how are you dealing with the chatter?
I don't really experience chatter. Oh, because of the heart. No, yeah, because I do the Scotch-Brite behind the
little padding.
And so I'm not getting it. I got a little padding, and none of my knives, like, there's no flat areas on any of my knives, especially on the blade. So, yeah, I'm usually creating a convex or something. And so it's riding on either a rotary platen, or it's got the, Scotch-Brite over kind of the radius platen for getting into the hollow with the S grind.
I've used blue tape, and I've used blue layers of blue tape on the platen, and that's been just enough to negate the chatter. And also, I do the same thing. I get like a green Scotch-Brite, cut it to the size of the platen, and then I use blue tape to tape it on.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so there you go, platen talk.
There we go. Yeah, and again, those figures that Mareko's given, it's going to depend on what motor you have, what size drive wheel you have. You know, don't take those as a written, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark LeBlanc, what do you look for when choosing the steel for your knives, or why did you choose the steel you are currently using? Is it cost, availability, hardness, etc.? Your sort of favorite steel that you use the most, Mareko, what would that be?
I mean, most of the knives I'm making are forged out of Damascus, and I'm using 1080 and 15 and 20 for that steel for making my patterns. Sometimes I throw 1095 in there if I'm looking for a little bit more of a gray tone. I use those because they forge together nicely. They heat treat at very similar temperatures. And yeah, they just play nicely together when it comes to forging. And, you know, the forging and Damascus making process is already hard enough. Don't need to make it harder on myself by using a really terrible mismatched combination of steels. Mm. So 1080 and 15 and 20 is pretty...
kill the doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I typically use 52-100 if I'm using a carbon steel, or I'll use a Sandvik 14C28 if I'm using stainless.
Ooh, that sounds so fancy when you say it.
And the only reasons for that really is because I'm used to using them. So I can get, you know, I'm sort of experienced in them. And I think if I went to a different steel, there's a bit of a learning curve again. So it's just what I know. Availability is good. And, you know, I like what Sandvik sort of stand for and all that kind of stuff as well. But Jeff, what are your favorite steels?
Well, there's something that you said that's very important, and I think we've said it before. Finding a steel that you feel comfortable with and sticking with it. And I was watching the Jason Knight's Forge series, and he says that you should find a steel that you like using, that you're comfortable with the heat treatment, and stick with it. And I really believe in that. So for carbon steel, I like 1084. And I like 52-100, and for stainless, I'm in love with 440C. I think it's great. I have really good results with the heat treatment. I like the way it looks. I like the way it. I don't like the way it grinds, but I like the way it finishes. I like the way it holds an edge. I like the way it has. I like the mill scale. I really have found myself to really enjoy it. But at the same time, I definitely want to get my hands on some of that MagnaCut and give it a whirl. But, you know, 440C, which I made this knife out of 440C, and somebody just popped in and wrote, "What do you think this is, 1982? Something like that. Like, you know, what is this, Rambo knife?" And he was like, "That's so, like, 1982. It was like, I was slightly insulted. But it works for me.
Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? If it works for you, everybody's got their own criteria, what they want, and, you know, the tools that they have and the way they work. So, yeah, there's no right or wrong.
Can you guys hear that in the background?
What is it?
It's a little go-kart, propane-powered go-kart. There's these fucking boneheads back here making a bunch of noise.
No, it sounds... Who's... They have, like... Who is this with go-karts?
Oh, just like I think they're videographers and photographers, but apparently they're set up back here on the patio. I didn't realize.
No, we don't hear them. But they got. I'm not going to be mad if you go yell at them.
I almost. This one fucking kid kept going in and out this little the porch door and it, screen door, and it kept slamming when it would close. And I was like, "What the fuck are you doing? I'm sitting right here with the goddamn fucking microphone recording. You can see my screen. You're just being a dick."
Oh man, you gotta be careful, man. Some of you say the wrong.
I miss the days of Mareko in a shared space. So it was like entertaining.
I tell you what, so you better be careful, man. They might get a crossbow in your ear.
I get an antler
up the ass. Yes.
A red dot on the back of your head any second.
Jeez.
Right, I tell you what, we're an hour and 15 minutes in. Shall we do one or two more of the listener things you don't say to a knife maker, and maybe call it a day?
Whatever you want. Absolutely. Let me get back to it. Okay, questions that you should never ask a knife maker. Gabriel Samaron says, "Where did you send that knife to have the handle made?" That's a question you shouldn't ask a knife maker.
You only do the steel,
I've had
right?
this question asked so many times, I have to tell people more than three times that I made it until they believe me. It's more than mildly annoying. Mitch Fenton says...
Because they can tell just by looking at you, there's no way you could have done that.
They don't believe you.
You're full of shit.
They
who
don't
really
believe
made it?
You're not presenting yourself as someone who's capable of making it. I'd be insulted too. That's why you'll never catch me in one of these things with like a table full of knives. I just cannot handle the nonsense
offenses.
People are going to say... Just don't get him angry. You know, this is what? This comes from Mitch Fenton. Do you forge your knives or you just cut them out? That drives me up the wall. Travis Mullen says, "Why is it so expensive?" That would annoy the shit out of me. I did get somebody, I think you said that, Mareko, that somebody sent you this long email asking you to justify the price of your knife.
Oh, yeah.
That is so aggressive.
I don't understand is, like, this person thinks that I owe that to them when I easily am just like, no. And then they delete the email. Done.
I bet they're raging. I bet they're sitting at home waiting for this reply.
They're just sitting there.
There is definitely, name. I mean, it's people don't really think about the things that they say. They just say whatever pops in their mind, and then it becomes obnoxious. Jerry Saunders says, don't say this to a knife maker. That's great, and I love it, but can you make a half an inch longer? LT says, topics to never ask a knife maker about. Can you replicate this exact design that someone else already made? To be honest, unless it's a historic design that someone's done and it's timeless, you're asking someone to plagiarize someone else's due diligence, and you should really question why the person won't just buy the design from the original maker. Nick Hershey says, questions not to ask a knife maker, and yeah, I was asked this. Can you make a knife that's the shape of a sequoia tree, but it is sharp on one side and a butter knife on the other? I recently,
what?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, that is that
like some type of cheese knife?
I guess a sequoia. I don't know why it has to be a sequoia. I have gotten people they'll send me a message. I look at your work and I know your work. And I'm trying to like separate myself out to have some style. And then they'll send me stuff that I just don't make. And it's like, it is amazing that the need to try to insert their own creative genius into something that you know won't work, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it comes from talentless hacks?
I think it comes...
Who just want to feel like they have some hand in creating something, even though they just themselves are incapable of creating things.
I wouldn't say talentless hacks, but I mean, it is. It's true. It's people who want to. And it's the same people who says, you know what you should do, and they have this great idea, and they're trying to tack on themselves into you. They're trying to attach themselves to you.
I told him to do that.
Yeah,
I think it's the name custom knives as well.
That was my idea.
When we say we do custom knives, I think that means people think they can just, you know, customize it themselves and, you know, get a bit involved with it, you know. I see so much, especially like Facebook ads and things like that, and you see stuff online where, you know, these people call themselves craftspeople, where basically they're just buying shit in from China and they're like burning on initials or something. They'll monogram something for you and calling themselves craftsmen, you know. And I think people are seeing that all the time. So when you've got something that, you know, is made from, you know, bare materials, they still think, you know, it is literally just a case of that. You can just, you know, just monogram my name on it. Or, you know, they want some sort of say in it, because as Mareko said, they want to feel as if there's some sort of ownership of them in the making.
But if you think about it, it is really being able to customize something for someone is quite it's generous in the sense that you're giving someone the opportunity that they might not get. Like if you go to a restaurant, you get a menu and you don't really off-road the menu. Now, we do have a listener who loves to off-road the menu, because he feels that he wants to challenge the chef, which trust me, they don't need your challenging PS. But there are people who like the idea that you're getting this incredible, it's generous of the knife maker to incorporate something of their life. But then they overreach, you know, can you make it with, one guy said to me, I want a knife for the kitchen. I want it to be like the size of a paring knife, but I want the tip to be a screwdriver. And I said, what do you want it for a screwdriver? He's like, well, if I have to do a screw. I'm like, so you're going to cut some fruit and vegetable and then you're going to screw some screws? I'm like, you don't need that. It doesn't really work like that.
Screwdriver.
He's like, oh, I just always wanted a knife that I could. I'm like, what are you taking your rusty tools from your fucking toolbox and you're cooking dinner with it? Come on, man.
Shucking oysters with flatheads.
I mean, people really like that. Here's a couple more. I just lost my space. Jeff's Hand Forge says, here's a question you don't ask a knife maker. How much does that cost? Okay, well, how much does it cost if I buy the steel and then you just make it? There's a lot of that. I love that. That is the best. Is like, well, what happens if I bring you the steel and the wood? Well, it's just still more work for me. You know, it's like, I mean, that doesn't really, that's not the fucking thing.
That's cash price.
That is the funniest part, is in like, you know, your wooden handles and your leaf spring are like cherished gold items. Oh, the labor's nothing. It's just the materials. Celery patch knives here says, here's questions you should never ask a knife maker. Number one, can you put my customer's maker's mark on your knife, which I have heard. I sent a message to a guy. I said, here's what it looks like. Here's my maker's mark. And the customer said, well, what about my maker's mark? I'm like, well, you're not the fucking maker, are you? number two. And then number two is the maker says, I exclusively carry culinary knives. And the customer says, well, then can you make me a sword? There's a lot of that.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love that Steve and Danny,
yeah, right
down in California with their laser. They would inscribe the spines, and one of my favorite ones I saw was it said not your fucking knife,
yeah,
along the spine.
Because
I think people are taking it into the kitchen. You know, other people want to grab it and use it because it's better than anything else.
Well, I have four more.
It's not your fucking knife.
I have four more if you want to run them down. One thing is, it's interesting, and I wonder what you think about that, Craig, based on what Mirko just said. Now, when you have a laser printer and you're able, or a laser jet, or laser whatever, to engrave, whatever the hell you call it, fucking laser.
Laser beams.
Freaking laser beams.
Does it, when somebody says, can you put this on the knife, do you feel, is it obnoxious, or do you not give a shit?
I use mine very sparingly. Very sparingly, just because I've seen some fucking people overusing them awfully. I mean, anything could be done, yeah, but it's a matter of taste, I think, isn't it? You know, and you know, when I first had it, I just wanted to put, you know, the type of steel written on it and all these different things, and you know, and it's, the more I use it, the less I use it. If that makes any sense.
You don't want to class up that ass with some cool designs on it?
Well, I mean, I've done some with some nice designs, and some people do some really great stuff. But, you know, it suits their style, I suppose, you know, whereas, you know, my style is very sort of pared back. It's easy to go crazy with them and just go fucking nuts. But
we had a customer, Allison was telling me that they wanted me to do this knife, and they wanted me to put some, you know, engrave something on it. And I wrote back, well, we don't really do that. And Allison sent it away, and then she says, oh, don't worry, they said that they'll take it to their guy. I'm like, I hope their guy is a fucking kid with a Dremel. A fucking kid with a ball. With a ball bit. I said, go ahead. And she's like, do you...
Slipping all over the blade.
She said, do you care? I'm like, I don't give a fuck. You can take it as soon as they get it, they can throw it out the window for all I care. They don't give a fuck. They want to give their kid a fucking Dremel and say, put it, sit, and spell out like, I love you. Go ahead, knock them dead. But as long as it doesn't come back. Matt the Wangle.
Battery and some lemon juice.
Matt the Wangle, our old good friend Matt the Wangle, says, questions you should never ask a knife maker. Have you ever heard of Forged in Fire? Do you make your own steel or do you just buy it? Can you...
or do you just buy it?
You lazy, lazy fucker.
That's a great one.
That is a great one. Do you make your own steel or do you just buy it? Can you make a sword? And then, can you sharpen my shitty knife here? Three more. Gal Vidmar says, questions you shouldn't ask a knife maker. Can you make me two knives for the price of one? Benko Wald is back. Question you should never ask a knife maker, will it keel? That's for them. And then the last one is Tristan Benedict, who says, hey guys, not really what you shouldn't say to a knife maker, but what you shouldn't do. I wish people would stop shaving their arms with my knife, especially if they're not going to be buying them. I don't want your gross arm hair on my nice new knife. Arm hair.
That's fucking gross. So like at a show,
let me
or something?
See if it shaves my arm.
Ooh, let me just check the edge.
Imagine. Let me see how it shaves my arm. No,
disgusting.
No, we're not shaving your arm. We don't want your DNA on this fucking thing. Get out of here. So the listeners came through, guys. The listeners came through.
They did. We had plenty. Yeah, we had plenty. That was good. That was
good. Do some.
Listen, next week, there's going to be a bit of a quiz again next week.
Oh, boy.
So bone up on the news this week, because it's going to be news-based. And there may well be some sort of knife blacksmithing-related
questions. For me and Mareko?
Questions. For you and Mareko.
You get a bone up?
Bone up. And on that note, thank you for listening. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
This show is brought to you by The Makery.
That was good. That was fun.
That was good fun, dude. And I got to say, Mareko, not only is your connection great this week, that the audio sounds great too.
Oh, dude, that was so much fun. I'm going to ask more questions because they really activated. Like, I was surprised. I only needed 24 hours to get all those questions. So I might do more of that throughout the week. That was a lot of fun. People are mad. It was hilarious. Totally hilarious.
Dude, the whole, I've heard the whole forging versus stock, people asking other makers, did you forge this or is it just stock removal?
That's what I get a lot. Yeah.
Fuck. That is
so stupid.
What? Honor gets that a lot on his, cause he Honor, Dies in Every Film has his videos. He's dealing with a video service, I think. And they're on Facebook and he's just getting gajillion views and he's seeing these people saying, I can do that with a, you know, with a, all he's doing is just cutting it out. I can do that. It is probably the worst thing you can say to a person. Just like how you know you can do better.
What's hilarious is those keyboard warriors, I swear to God, if they got behind, got a plate of steel, like set up in the shop, they would look like the biggest hapless piece of shit. Because I 1,000% guarantee that they actually could not do that.
Yeah.
People just like to talk.
Well, anybody who could would know that you wouldn't say those things. You know, I think that's the key.
Put up or shut up. All right, let's do it.
I mean, that was the problem. That was one of the problems for Metal Shop Masters was the criticism people had from the industry towards the contestants and the judges. I mean, they were vilified. They were all vilified. Oh, it was sucked, and she's terrible, and who the fuck does she think she is? And there's a lot of angry people who should be focusing their energy elsewhere. You know. Speaking of focusing our energy, I'm having a wonderful time playing Wordle, and I get messages from Tomer and Craig at 3 o'clock in the morning because they get the Wordle way faster than I do. I'm enjoying playing Wordle very much.
Well, everybody gets obviously at midnight. So, you know, when the day changes, that's when the new Wordle appears. So if you wanted it early, you could just change the time on your laptop and you would get it earlier. But I've been having terrible trouble sleeping the last sort of 2 weeks. So I'm generally up at midnight and I'm like, I can do the Wordle now. And it's got to a point where I'm looking forward to it, you know. Oh, it's midnight soon. Midnight soon. So sad my life has become. But
have you tried melatonin?
No. But have you tried one yet, Mareko, or Wordle yet?
Nope. I don't have any games.
No, it's
on
you
my
go to. Phone. It's on a. No, it's on a download. You just go to a website and then it just comes up.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's not it's an app or anything.
It's very good. Not. It's easy because it's like 5-letter words, and then you have to kind of like use deduction to figure out the word. It's a lot of fun. My wife loves it. Our kid does it. I got Tomer's all over the place. He cursing at me. He did it one time. He listened to this podcast. He said it to me, and he wrote "eat my ass" when he answered the question. He says, "This is even my first language." So,
I've just sent you a link, Mareko, to your phone. Of something I'm launching.
We'll talk
Monday.
About it now. This is Monday.
Okay.
Shall we talk about it? It's Monday, isn't it? It is Monday. So I've made a Wordle. I've made a Wordle called Sharple.
Oh, I thought it was Bladle.
Okay.
I think Sharple was better.
Sharple.
It was going to be Bladle. So it's Sharple. Basically, it's Wordle for knife makers. So all the words are knife related. Okay. Yeah, could be some fun. So share your results.
Where will it be?
On your Instagram. It'll be on the new Knife Talk.
Look at
website,
you.
Which is going live Monday.
You're a goddamn genius.
So yeah, the makery.network will be live on Monday, as well as knifetalk.net, and each of them will have a link to Sharple, which is Wordle for
Do you want to explain the rules so our listeners can know them and not, and what you should and shouldn't do?
Surely people know about. So if you don't know what Wordle is, it's a quiz where every day everybody has the same answer to this quiz. It's a word. So you have a five-letter word, and you have five attempts to guess this five-letter word. And everybody has the same word, so it's not like individual to you. You only get a new word once a day, so it's not one of these addictive things that you'd always play in. And so you guess five letters, and it'll tell you if any of those letters are in the word. So if it goes yellow, you know the letter's in the word, but maybe you've got it in the wrong place.
I'm seeing six rows.
Six rows. Yes, you have six attempts, maybe. Six attempts, sorry. Okay. And if it's green, that means you've got the letter right and it's in the right place as well. Mm. So if you imagine five gaps for these letters, and you have these six attempts to make them. So it's just real fun. And for something so simple, it's surprisingly addictive. And again, even though you only get one a day,
it's obnoxious, nice little... but it is obnoxious when people post about how smart they are. It is fun. I do enjoy sending it off to you, and you'll send me one that, you know, you did it better than me, or, you know, it is fun, and it's not as awful as I thought it would be. I do enjoy it. I do it like first thing in the morning.
Yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it. So they'll be live on Monday. So yeah, so post your Sharple results. Let's see if we've got any clever.
But you shouldn't listen. Spoil it.
Yeah. Just give your you know, if you've played Wordle, you know you'll have a grid which doesn't reveal the answer, but it shows how good you are at it.
How many attempts you got in it?
And you can do the same thing with Sharple. You can share your colored grid.
I think that's nice of you to do that.
If you don't know what it is, this makes no sense at all.
Fine.
But it's fun.
Fine, it'll be fine. Yeah.
It's all good.
So what's everybody?
So what are you up to this week, you guys? What, apart from Mareko, obviously you're traveling.
Traveling on the road.
On the road again. Are you traveling alone or are you traveling with others?
So Neil invited me to this Winter Strong elk pumping event. And so.
Elk Pump 2000.
Elk pumping. It's an elk pumping event.
Pumping iron, pumping elk, right?
Invited me to this elk pumping event.
No, it's good. It's fun. And there's a lot of great people here, honestly. But yeah, so he and I will be going together down to Georgia, down to like a suburb of Atlanta, to go do some work teaching. A couple of years ago, I went and did some teaching with Zach Brown. So Zach Brown is a musician, and he does all kinds of creative stuff. He's always been a creative person, and he's really been trying to up his knife making skills in the last few years. And I've been helping.
That's awesome.
By coming down and teaching him. Yeah.
And what's the name of his knife company called?
He ended up selling Southern Ground to, I can't even remember the name of the company that bought it.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, that was fast.
Yeah. It's good.
Jeff, your week.
Well, this is Friday, so my wife and daughter are going away tomorrow into the city. So I'm actually going to do some forging on Saturday. I have to prepare for the class I'm teaching at the Center for Metal Arts and the class I'm teaching at Dragon's Breath Forge. So I got a day, so I'm going to do that, and then I got another day coming up where my buddy Sunset Forge is going to send me a drift. I'm going to make another hammer. So I'm looking forward to that. Boy. And then this coming week, there's work to be had. There's work to be done. I'm waiting for some G10 to come in. I'm hoping the G10 arrives right when I finish hand sanding this set. I got four more knives to hand sand. And then I want to get this set out. It's set to a friend of mine who had a very specific idea in mind. And I'm looking forward to that. And then I got the next batch of Neptune Sunrise Offset Serrated coming up, which I'm very excited about. I did the first one, and I'm waiting for the knives to come so I can heat treat them, grind them, and put the serrations in them and put the handles on them. And then we're going to do the fader forks, and we're gonna, blah, 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 blah. It's all good. I'm working hard.
All good. Nice. Either of you watching anything good at the moment?
The new season of Ozark is
that show
out.
Good?
It's fucking good.
Everyone
I like it.
Everyone talks
a lot,
about it, and
personally.
I'm just like, I don't know if I can handle another series.
I remember I watched the first one when it came out a couple of years ago, and it was great, but for some reason I didn't watch the second, so I'm
they're
way
on the
behind.
Fourth season.
It's on the fourth. Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, so.
Wow. I remember it being great, but first, I don't know why I didn't watch the others. I don't really know.
Sure.
We're watching Money Heist at the moment.
Oh, right. How's that?
It's good, but it's one of those things. I think it was originally Spanish, so it's dubbed.
Yes.
So I normally struggle
with subtitles.
No, they've got like voiceover. You know, they sort of revoiced it in English, but they don't match the people. So
yeah,
it's
that.
Great, but it's every now and again you're just like, fucking hell, this is terrible. But it draws you in because it's just loads of action, you know. So we're.
I feel like sometimes the story suffers a bit from the translation because usually they try to translate it so the voiceover matches the movement of the foreign language speaker. But that's always terrible, like you're saying.
Yeah.
But it does change the story.
Yeah,
and I hate that aspect. So
yeah,
I always watch dubbed.
Yeah, the actual events of it are brilliant because it keeps you in because there's stuff always happening, you know. But yeah, every now and again you're just like, Jesus, this sucks, the acting, but. It's good.
I tried getting into fucking The Witcher. The Witcher.
Oh, yeah?
I
haven't seen any of that.
I'm waiting for it to get good.
I haven't watched it.
I'm just like...
It's like how many episodes
in
are you?
I mean, I watched the first season thinking something's going to happen. And, you know, into the second season, I'm just like, all right, he grunts and he's got white hair. And just, I mean, I just don't really... And I just couldn't get in. It wasn't... doing it for me. I'm thinking all my friends watch it. I'm just like, maybe I should watch this. I'm just like, oh, it's fucking terrible. And then I can't believe this, but we watched the NFL playoffs. It was so goddamn exciting. Like, both really? Games, my wife and I watched that, and then I bought Book of Boba Fett. I'm in. I'm not really? No spoilers, but I tell you what, it's very exciting.
Oh. Have you seen Afterlife?
I did.
Yet?
I finished it last night.
Oh, that
depressing
looks so
as
good.
Fuck.
Oh, it is depressing. It's just it's brilliant, but it's that it kills you.
Why does it have to be so goddamn depressing all the time?
Yeah,
it's like I mean,
because that's real life.
No,
Jeff.
But he's like overtly like flirting with suicide like every episode. It's like just like, all right, you're sad.
There are these moments of complete joy, and then they just take them away from you, and it's just like, oh, Jesus, yeah. You know, you're expecting the dog to die as well, and it's all like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, he just kicks you in the teeth, that Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, it's done very well, but I'm sure that'll be the last one. I don't think there'll be any more of that.
Well, that's his move, right?
True.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Do you think Derek was, like, weird?
I love Derek. I think it's possibly... better than Afterlife. I loved it. Loved it. It's weird that he plays a character with you know, a reduced mental capacity, should we say. But,
do you think that was appropriate?
That's a very kind way of saying that.
It was a tough one.
And I've got this thing when people say, is that appropriate? They're actors. That's what they're doing. They're acting.
It's literally their job, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
To pretend to be somebody they're not?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No. I watched the whole thing and I thought it was good, but at the same time, I'm just like, he's also like, I don't know, Ricky's, he's, I love everything he does, but some of it's just like, Derek was like, oh, this is fucking weird.
Yeah, I think Derek is very British as well. Saying that, the first office was very sort of British as well, you know, a lot of sort of British cultural references, that kind of thing, but, I think he's brilliant, and when you know, offensive, yeah, he is. That's what he is, isn't it? You know, but yeah, love it.
When he did the Golden Globes, those are the greatest. Those are the greatest things of all time.
So good.
He was interviewing. So he said, "This is probably one of the funniest things I'll never forget." When he's bringing someone on stage, He goes. Now I like to drink as much as the next guy, unless the next guy's Mel Gibson. Here comes Mel Gibson. I thought that was the greatest line of all time. I like to drink as good as the next guy, except if the next guy is Mel Gibson.
His latest stand-up. He's probably about 2-3 years old now, anyway. But he mentions that about the Golden Globes and that he had all these jokes that were far worse. And he, you know, with his partner, his girlfriend, he sort of tests them with her. She'd be like, "You can't say that," you know.
It was so funny. And he was just like looking at people and saying, "Shut up. Nobody cares about you." Yeah. You can watch he really made it amazing. But apparently he really upset a lot of people that were there who were like not really there to be like shat upon.
Roasted.
Yeah, he just doesn't care.
I fucking love it.
Yeah. Right. I need to go. It's 10 to 11.
Her voice.
I got a Wordle to do in an hour and 10 minutes. I need to warm up.
You're going to pump some milk.
Try melatonin.
What form is melatonin? Is it? How do you take it?
Like gummy.
It's usually just like you can get it in gummy form, and it's not a high dosage. It's usually like 3 or 5 milligrams.
Gives you them fucked up dreams, really though, dude. I mean, it's sending me off. My kid and I would take two and I would eat two and I'd look at my kid. I'm like, I'm off to dreamland, bitch. I didn't say that to her, but I mean, you know, get what I'm saying.
The problem is I've got a bag packed here ready for the hospital run in the middle of the night, you know, so I don't want to be groggy waking up, you know.
Sure. I mean, it's going to put you into hell. Put you into some hell.
Put me out.
What is your guys' due date?
I think it's the 7th of March, but she is big. She is big, big. So, I mean, we're expecting at least 2 weeks early. They're telling us to prepare for, so that would mean 2 weeks, you know. So any time in the next 2 weeks, I suppose. That's the reason I'm not sleeping, to be honest. It's quite stressful because we're still not in the new house yet. Still work to be done. You know, there's just a shitload going on. The kids are still off school. Their teacher now has COVID, so they've had to close. And it's like, I think it's just a lot of stress is stopping the sleep, really, you know, but it's all coming to an end soon.
We'll get some sleep.
All good. Yes.
Thanks again.
I shall try. Right. Lovely speaking to you both. And I shall speak to you both very, very soon.
See you later, guys.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.